Joining us now, NHL on Sportsnet, our hockey insider, Chris Johnston, fresh off a little bit of a vacay. CJ, were you joining the yacht club like Ben Hutton and Brock Besser were in Cabo over the last week?
No, guys, I wasn't quite doing that, but I did sneak away for a few days with my wife to San Diego and get some sun and relax a little bit. We went out for a round of the PGA Tour event last weekend at Torrey Pines and just generally put our feet up, which is not something during the season we're afforded much time to do.
Excellent. You were part of a different yacht club then in San Diego. Okay, I gotcha.
I've heard that the Little Italy in San Diego is quite nice, so it's something I have been meaning to check out now that I've moved out here to the West Coast, CJ. Don't know if you checked
it out.
Gotta
go. But, yeah. I think it's a cool place. I mean, a little more chilled out than L.A., lots of good restaurants if you want. There's beach, there's sun more days of the year than anywhere else in North America. I highly recommend it as a getaway.
That is a sound selling point. All right. So we were reading Ian McIntyre's piece at sportsnet.ca. He talked with Jim Benning. And the Canucks GM kind of started to downplay the value of a late first-round pick. Kind of an interesting tactic, I think, from the GM going into the deadline. But how do you view it, and what do you hear from execs when it comes to a late first-round pick going into this year's deadline?
Well, I mean, there's a couple ways to view it. I mean, I think he was just being honest, frankly, in that case, because, you know, it's true. There's a vast difference between the fifth overall pick and the 25th overall pick. And, you know, I think most people understand that intuitively, but, you know, it's important to point out that most of the teams dealing a first round pick anywhere near the trade deadline, you know, those are going to be picks that come in the 20 to 31 range at this point, and maybe even lower, 25 to 31. You know, it's really only the contenders that I think feel comfortable doing that. You know, it's one of the reasons we made such a big deal of the fact that Ottawa traded away its pick, you know, to Colorado as part of that Matt Duchene deal that's, you know, going to be in the draft lottery and potentially become the number one overall selection. I mean, the way trades have gone in the league, like, these days, it just doesn't happen that way anymore. So, you know, I think it's a fair point from the GM, but, you know, there's certainly value to that pick. You know, the LA Kings feel good about having a second first rounder in the deal they made with the Toronto Maple Leafs earlier this week. It gives them some options either to maybe move it at the draft and turn it into 2 second rounders, which is something we've seen teams do with a little bit more frequency, or perhaps use it to try to move up a little bit in the first round. I think, you know, when you're a team that's rebuilding like the Kings are, there's still value, even if that pick ends up coming in 26th, 27th, what have you, depending on where the Leafs finish this year. So, you know, I think his point is well made, but, you know, it's not as though late first round has no value league-wide. There's certainly a lot of good players selected at that stage of the draft as well.
Absolutely. And CJ, do you think part of this is timing as well? Because Jake Muzzin gets traded to the Toronto Maple Leafs, and everybody starts talking about Chris Tanev, and what's the value to a team, you know, to that player, to the Vancouver Canucks right now? You think that's kind of to lay the groundwork that maybe, hey, this player is potentially more valuable to us on the roster than a late first rounder?
Yeah, and that's probably a fair point too. I mean, when you look at a team on the fringes of the playoffs conversation and trying to you know, keep playing meaningful games through February and into March, you know, I think it is fair to say that both Alex Edler and Chris Tanev have more value to that kind of team at this point than maybe the uncertainty of that first round pick could have. And you know, I think it's pretty clear where the Canucks stand on this issue now with these guys, that you know, they're not going to seek to trade them unless something unexpected happens or there's a change of heart in the meantime. And so, you know, I'm sure the comment comes in that context as well, even though it wasn't stated explicitly in Ian's story, that, you know, you have a team that doesn't want to subtract too much at this stage because, you know, the season has gone a little bit better than I think everyone could have hoped for, or at least at the high end of what could have been hoped for. And, you know, there certainly is no guarantees if you get a late first rounder that it's going to become an impactful player. And I think there is value in every season, even a year where obviously we're not talking about the Canucks challenging for a championship or anything like that, but there's some value to playing these meaningful games now and not, you know, even deflating the team by trading away a trusted veteran, a solid player on the blue line and, you know, getting worse in the short term.
Chris Johnson, our guest. So Mike Babcock doesn't seem over the moon that he's got another left shot defenseman. I'm sure he's happy to have Jake Muzzin in town in Toronto, to be truthful. But he did say it's not ideal to have another left shot defenseman added to that roster. Do you think the Leafs are still on the lookout for a right shot?
I think the coach hopes they are. You know, I'm not so sure management is, because, you know, it's been a priority from the Leafs end of things not to subtract from the current roster while trying to improve at the deadline. I think that from the Toronto perspective of the Muzzin trade is a positive. They didn't give up either of their top two prospects, and they didn't take anyone off the roster right now. So, you know, it's hard not to view the move as one that strengthened them in the immediate term and improved their chances at being competitive as they get closer to the playoffs. You know, I think Mike's comments, I'm sure most people saw them on Twitter, maybe didn't hear the context of how he said them. I mean, he's certainly happy with Jake Muzzin, but it leaves the Leafs with five left shot Ds among their top six defensemen, among the guys that are going to dress each night. And you know, he's a coach in particular that doesn't like playing guys off wing or offside. You know, it's not something he's preferred throughout his career, and he's already had to do it. But, you know, I think that it's one of those cases where he's more than happy to do it, you know, in the immediate time, because they do think they've got better with Jake Muzzin now joining the Leafs top four. And, you know, certainly the players seem pretty excited about it, you know, at this point. And so, yeah, it isn't perfect, but, you know, I think roster construction is always pretty much a work in progress. I don't think any team will tell you they've got everything just the way they want it. And, you know, there's still 3.5 weeks until the trade deadline comes. And I'm sure the coach won't mind if a right shot D, another one, walks through that door at some point.
You listen to Reach Deep. We're joined by Sportsnet's very own Chris Johnston. Chris, the big news of the week has been Artemi Panarin and his agent Dan Milstein basically come out and saying, hey, yeah, the extension's going to have to wait till the offseason. Essentially saying, it doesn't look like it's going to work out in Columbus. What do you see happening at the deadline, and who do you think would be the biggest players for his services if there is a trade to go before the deadline?
Well, you know, Columbus is certainly aggressively looking to move Artemi Panarin now. And, you know, that news was disappointing for the organization. I mean, it's kind of been pointing in this direction since last year, but, you know, internally they've held the belief that maybe they could change his mind, or that, you know, his outlook might, you know, shift a little bit as the season went along. And I know some teammates have been working on him. And so, you know, the fact that he's announced that he won't, you know, give an extension, you know, any consideration before the trade deadline, it's left Jarmo Kekalainen in a position where, you know, I think he does have to explore the market aggressively, and, you know, they won't be a pure seller. I think that trade will have to look like a sales trade, because any contender looking to get in on Artemi Panarin, you know, they're going to be giving up futures. They're not going to be trading off their own roster to any meaningful degree. So, you know, I could see a scenario where Columbus is getting first round pick and some high end prospects, you know, maybe a roster player for Panarin, and then flipping some of those assets in order to try to replace a little bit of what they've lost offensively, because they very much want to, you know, be in the best position possible to qualify for the playoffs and maybe win around this year. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see what shakes out. I mean, in terms of motivated buyers, you know, a team like the Boston Bruins has been on the lookout all year for, you know, in addition to their forwards that would make a difference. And a guy this good rarely is available at the deadline in the prime of his career. So, you know, I see a fit there. You know, I wonder a little bit about the Florida Panthers. I think long-term they're a team that will be interested in trying to make a play to sign Artemi Panarin should he become a free agent on July 1st. You know, they might not have the same incentive to, you know, give up some futures to get him now. But, you know, they could be lurking in the weeds here. But, you know, it's a scenario where you've got 15 teams making that call just to see, you know, what the price might be and just to see if there's a fit. And, you know, the last couple of days, I know that Jarmo Kekalainen has been very busy speaking with his colleagues. You know, obviously the other GMs are paying attention. And when they see that statement come out on Monday, as it did from Dan Milstein, you know, all of a sudden you have a player, you know, as I say, that doesn't typically, someone that this high of skill level doesn't typically move at a deadline. I think there's a lot of teams kicking tires right now. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he's traded just because, you know, Columbus, I think, feels as though that's something that they might have to do if the deal is good enough. And now we'll see if anyone steps up and really gets serious.
Is it true, the kind of rumors that we hear, that he's, you know, his eye is on potentially New York or Miami as the two main destinations that he would want to settle long term, Artemi Panarin?
Yeah, there's more. Those are more than just rumors. You know, I think it's pretty clear this is a guy who would like to live in a big city or maybe even a destination type of place. You know, I don't see the Tampa Bay Lightning having the cap space to ever get in on either a trade for him or signing him as a free agent. But, you know, I think he wouldn't mind that kind of situation either. But, you know, part of what's going on here, I mean, funny thing about Artemi Panarin is he's played great since the Blue Jackets got him. He's been a great teammate. You know, there's no issues with him. He's even, you know, continued to play well this season with all this kind of in the backdrop. But, you know, I just don't know that it's been quite the fit fully for his life. And, you know, you can understand his position. This will probably be a 7 or 8 year contract, depending on how it unfolds, that he's signing. I mean, it's basically his last deal in the NHL, and it's committing away at an important time in his life. And, you know, I do think he has his eyes on not necessarily specific team so much, but, you know, a place that's got a little bit more going on. And, you know, that's a shame for Columbus because, you know, I think it's a cool city, actually a little under the radar in this league. But, you know, the reality is, you know, I think he wants to play somewhere else, and we'll probably see that happen when he becomes a free agent on July 1st.
Is part of this too, like, we talked a lot last summer about the John Tavares effect and how, you know, maybe being a trailblazer for future stars to at least, you know, get to the legal tampering period and see what other markets have to offer and potentially entertain July 1 more so than we had seen star players in the past.
Right. What it is a player taking hold of his own situation more than I think we've seen in a lot of times. And, you know, Tavares is one of those. And I think that it's going to be more of a trend as time goes along. I mean, it just hasn't been quite the way that hockey has gone. And so, you know, these guys face a bit more backlash, I think. But, you know, I follow the NBA casually, and you see a lot of it there. I mean, star players frequently change teams. You see guys force their way to situations where they want to be. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if the NHL over a period of time, I don't think it'll reach the levels of the NBA, but where it becomes more common and, you know, I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing for the league. I think it creates interest. It can be tough for some certain cities. And certainly I'm sure there's fans in Columbus right now that aren't enjoying the storyline as much as the national media might be. But, you know, it's these guys' rights. I mean, their careers are so short. It's hard for me to be too critical of them. And as I say, I think Panarin deserves some credit in that, you know, he's more than honoring his contract this year with how he's playing. He hasn't done anything, I don't think, to make this a distraction. It's just, it's going to be one when you're on an expiring deal and there's no extension and the trade deadline's coming. I mean, it's always going to be a topic of conversation for players in that situation that are as good as he is.
Looking at the Winnipeg situation right now with Patrick Laine, he's been in a slump. He also had to sit on the bench and played less than 11 minutes the other night as well. At his situation, I know Nick Kiprios mentioned that there could be some doubt to his long-term future in Winnipeg as well. Do you feel that that could be the case with Laine?
Well, I mean, it's possible. You know, I may be a little, I don't think it's quite reached that level. I mean, this guy scored what, like 18 goals in November. You know, he's had a very strange year with long droughts and then a period of goal scoring unlike anything you almost ever see in today's game. You know, I think what it does do, though, is it increases the odds that, you know, you see him maybe sign a bridge contract with his next deal, you know, which could be something that works in the Jets' favor with the other decisions they have with Kyle Connor coming up and you know, some other players that need signed. And you know, they're one of those teams on the fringes now of a real salary cap crunch. You know, I do think it raises some questions about how they proceed with him. But in the big picture, you know, I see this as a guy who is scored at a pretty crazy rate to start his career that's going through a lengthy down period. And you know, I think the Jets are in a good position in some ways in that they can play him, you know, that little in a game they won, you know, in a game where they have other players that they can call on. And you know, I think it's a message sending, lesson sending kind of thing from Paul Maurice. But, you know, I don't get any sense, you know, from the Jets that they've soured on him. You know, it's just a bit of a learning curve for, you know, guys, I say, I mean, what, did he have 44 goals last year in his second year in the league? He's been one of the youngest players in the league these last 2 years while scoring all those goals. You know, I think that if you look at the big picture, he'll be just fine. But this is a tough time for him. And, you know, I think it could impact what happens with that next contract, which, you know, is coming up pretty soon for him this summer.
Yeah, he's an unbelievable talent in terms of scoring goals, but you see the guy as a guy that doesn't necessarily drive offense, and the Jets have been looking for that second line center for some time. Who, you know, is that still the number one need for that team right now? They need somebody who can maybe play with Laine and help them drive that offense?
Yeah, I think that'll be a priority. You know, I wonder about Derek Brassard with the Jets, you know, just given that they were one of the teams that were inquiring with Ottawa on him last year when he moved before the deadline. And now Pittsburgh is certainly going to ship him out at some point. You know, there's a few other guys, you know, Kevin Hayes, perhaps from the New York Rangers, you know, would be of interest to a team like Winnipeg. But, you know, I think with where they are, quite clearly in a window of contention, you know, having been to the third round last year and still having, you know, some pretty key players that are in young age brackets, you know, I think that there'll be a team that'll be adding some pieces or a piece at the deadline. And you know, if they could get a center, you know, that would be huge. I mean, even you wonder about Matt Duchene, if Ottawa puts him on the market, that could be a fit. But, you know, I think that they'll be looking for something, not just specifically for Line A, but to give them more balance and you know, put him in a position. I mean, he may not drive possession in some of those numbers as well as other players, but I think when you score at the rate he does, he's just got such a great release. There's still tremendous value to that, and you know, they might have to work a little bit to put him in more favorable positions. But, you know, as I say, I do think in the big picture, this guy will be fine, and I think he'll be continue to be a big part of the Jets for years to come.
CJ, always appreciate the time. We'll be chatting next week. Thanks for this today.
All right, guys. Talk to you in a few days.
Yeah, there he is. Chris Johnson, NHL on Sportsnet, our hockey insider.
Sportsnet 650.